Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution and production made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and protection. Taking advantage of volatile times. That's our latest addition to the webinar library open to InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, August 29th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. I can't believe it's almost September, my birthday month almost coming up. So this hour is all about you, enabling you to become an above average investor. You want to rise above the ranks of the average person. And the goal is to help you avoid the mistakes that are pretty much guaranteed to cost you money. And as always, we talk about usually it's emotional mistakes or sometimes it's just lack of knowledge. And that's understandable. There's a lot to know when it comes to investing, especially in today's world. So many different variables. We're in a globalized economy. So many different investment options out there. So it can be confusing. I understand that. So our goal is to educate you, get you up to speed on what's happening in the world of investing, and also to help you control your emotions so that you don't make the mistake that the average person makes that really puts them behind the eight ball. So we talk about evaluating individual stocks, but most of our listeners are likely to have some sort of mutual funds in their portfolio, whether it's a 401k or an IRA. And maybe we don't talk enough about how to evaluate mutual funds. They're still the largest. ETFs are growing, but the mutual fund industry is still much, much larger than ETFs. Now, individual investors will purchase mutual funds as a way to get quick and easy diversification. Diversifies their portfolio over a particular area of the marketplace without a lot of research, daunting research, right? Buying multiple stocks, multiple companies. They can hold an array of assets, bonds, stocks, commodities, futures, options. They can do a lot of things. And frankly, their strategies tend to be a lot more complex than the average person can really comprehend. Now, the valuation techniques of, or the evaluation techniques of a mutual fund are different than evaluating stocks. Very different. So one of the first steps of evaluating a mutual fund is to classify its scope. You have to compare like for like, apples to apples. You are looking at a large cap fund, you got to compare it to a large cap fund. Small cap fund to a small cap fund, a foreign large cap growth fund to another foreign large cap growth fund. So you want to benchmark the fund that you're looking at to its closest peers. Why? Because every asset class has different risk metrics. They do well at different times. And so you want to make sure that the assets that mutual fund tends to pick, or the managers of that mutual fund tend to pick in that particular area of the marketplace, are better than average. So that's why you want to compare apples to apples. That's how you compare it apples to apples. Now, when reviewing a mutual fund's historic performance, it's important to look at each year. Just because a mutual fund has a significantly high five-year performance, they may have had one particular abnormal year that really got them there. Or maybe you're just coming out of a recession, right? And they did well because in the recession, they were conservative, and they tend to be more conservative. Well, if you are want to be aggressive going forward, maybe that conservative fund isn't going to be the best. And vice versa. If you got into a time, say over the last 5 or 6 years, where the market was strong, and you're maybe a little more cautious going forward, which is understandable, maybe a fund that maybe lagged a little bit over the last 5 years, because they tend to be more conservative, is a better way to go. See how it can cut both ways? So you have to really look at it as a whole, and not just over, I think 5 years is even too short of a time frame. You want to look 10 plus years through multiple recessions. Okay. Then finally, you have to look at expenses, fee structures. There's something that's called a expense ratio. Every fund has an expense ratio. It can be very small to very high. Now you want to find no load funds and hopefully expense ratio below 1.5%, below 1% really. Now some funds, you know, a foreign small cap fund, their expense ratio is going to be much higher than an intermediate term bond fund. Two very different types of investments. Two very different types of risk versus reward as well. So understanding these intricacies can be the difference in you making a good choice and a poor one. Now, do you have any money questions? Do you have questions about evaluating mutual funds? Or any money matters? Any other money matters? We want to hear from you. You can check in right now or anytime with any money questions at 888-99-CHART. That is our number. We'll try to answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Hey guys, I had a really quick question about taxes when you purchase a stock. If I were to purchase on an ETF and hold it for 5 years, when do I pay the taxes on that stock? Do I pay it yearly or do I pay it whenever I sell it and get out of it? Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, if you're in a traditional brokerage account, a taxable account, you're going to pay it when you sell it if you have a gain. Now, you might get dividends in the meantime, and you'll get taxed on those dividends, but you don't pay that tax until you sell it. Okay? Simple question. Simple answer, I think. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through. I always say, try to call in sooner rather than later. Don't push it to the last segment of the show. I like to have a little buffer to get your question answered. Now let's go to a text question. It says, hey, Steve and Justin. This is from Chris from Atlanta, Georgia. It says, love your show and listen to your podcast every day. I have been considering buying a REIT, Stockland Corporation, STKAF. I would appreciate any insight you might have on this and your thoughts in general on REITs at this time. Wow, this is an interesting one. Are they bankrupt? It's a symbol is STKAF. Let me look at the technicals. It doesn't look like it's trading at on a major exchange. It's over the counter. I would not buy this. I don't know if you're attracted to this supposed 5% dividend. That could be the case, but it's trading at such low levels. Let's see what they do. They develop and manage real estate projects, invest in retail, office, logistics, and office park properties, residential properties, retirement living facilities. It's a very diversified REIT, so it's not really targeted in one area of the REIT sector. It's out of Australia, it looks like. You know, I don't have enough information on this. It's kind of all over the place. It's a foreign... You know what? I'm okay with it. The more I'm looking at it, I'm getting a little bit decent information on it. It's trading on the OTC market, the over-the-counter, which I tend to not like. It's trading at $3.63. I tend to not like stocks that low either because it tends to mean they're going bankrupt. But this looks okay. I need to do more research. This is one of those ones that it's not listed on exchanges. It looks like it's foreign. I need to dig deeper, but the raw numbers actually looked okay. Now, almost three-quarters of Americans are experiencing financial stress. Now, one of the top sources of stress is saving for retirement. Now, we're going to talk about a remedy for financial stress, or a few remedies. All right, that's our main talking point today. I also want to talk about term life insurance versus whole life insurance. I get this question a lot. I get people being pitched whole life insurance most of the time. And most of the time they don't need it. And they think of it as I don't want to go too far into it, but we're going to compare the two. I also want to talk about the profit swoon on Wall Street, or meaning for corporations generally, and the GDP number that we've seen recently. How do they relate? And then finally, are bonds no longer a diversifier of your portfolio? We're going to talk about that as well. So 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on this hour of Invest Talk. Let's take a quick review of today's market. We had the Dow up 107, the S&P up 11, and the NASDAQ up 13. You had a big sell-off on Friday on the back of Stanley Fisher's comments that a rate hike in September and December are possible. And I think it'll be interesting because he gets on Bloomberg tomorrow morning. And my guess is he'll reiterate that statement. And I think the market might not like that. So that'll be very interesting. And then we have the jobs number coming out at the end of the week. And that's going to be 180,000 jobs created. That's what the estimate is. So that's kind of the baseline. See where that comes in. But overall, we're still kind of in this holding pattern up here near the highs. Now, gauging your risk tolerance is one of the fundamental issues to consider when planning your investment strategy, either alone or together with a professional. So use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It's a quick quiz, and your answers can tell you a lot about the level of risk you are willing and able to take. It's free. It's on investtalk.com, so click on the Invest Talk tab. Chart, 888-992-4278. Now we have a text question. It says, can you please explain the underlying reasons that the dollar gets stronger or weaker? Is it government treasury bond sales, dollar exchange rate versus the euro or other currencies or other factors? Thank you. I'm a loyal longtime listener, podcast listener. That's a great question. The strength of the dollar always has to do with other currencies, right? How any price of the dollar is in relation to what you can exchange it for in another currency, okay? And usually goes up and down in value based on supply and demand, okay? Just like anything. Now, central banks in today's world have a huge effect on this. Why? Because they see the dollar as a tool, a policy tool, or at least their currency as a policy tool. Meaning, if another country can weaken their currency versus other currencies, it makes their exports look more attractive. So they've been pushing that down by printing money, lowering interest rates, doing everything they can to get the price down. After the break, I'll get into this a little bit more. Do you know? Give us a call at 888-99-CHART. We have 35 minutes left in the show, but it's going to go by quick, so get your call in. Now, before the break, we had a question from a podcast listener about the dollar. What makes the dollar strong or weak? And I was talking about how in today's world, central banks have a much stronger pull and push on the dollar than they used to. And this is around the world because central banks are trying to help their economies grow. And one of the best ways for them to do that is to weaken their currency so that their exports are more competitive, and meaning the value of the currency is lower, so other foreign countries can buy their goods and services with less money. And so it makes it look cheap. So their stimulates their economy. Well, right now, Europe, Japan, many other countries around the world are still easing policy, meaning they're printing more money, or they're lowering rates, or they're buying, you know, they're doing QE and buying assets, meaning they're putting more and more of their currency out there into the marketplace, or making it cheaper and cheaper to borrow in their currency, right? And we've tightened once, we're in a tightening pattern, our Fed is. And so that's what's really rallied the dollar. So that is in today's world, the central bank is the main thing. The central banks around the world is the main driver of whether the dollar is getting stronger or weaker. Okay? And some of that has to do with what happens versus expectations. You know, you can get into the intricacies of it. But generally, interest rates tend to be what drives currencies overall. So if a currency's interest rate is higher, or the interest rate in a particular country is higher at the central bank, well, their currency tends to be stronger. Why? Because investors are going there for yield, and that tends to push up their currency. Whereas if their interest rates are low, well, why would you go invest in that currency? Because you're not going to get much yield out of it. So that's an overgeneralization. There's a lot of intricacies to it, but hopefully that gives you some perspective. Now let's talk about stressing about your money. I know a lot of people stress about money, and I understand that. But I think people put too much emphasis on it, first of all. And second of all, there are some mind tricks that we play on ourselves that make the stress worse. Okay? And I'm going to talk about six of them, and this is based on what is called Meequilibrium, and this is a philosophy based on 15 years of research by psychologist Andrew Shatti. I think I'm saying it right. He is the author of The Resilience Factor, 7 Essential Skills for Overcoming Life's Inevitable Obstacles. So the goal of his philosophy is to help people change negative thinking patterns, reduce their stress, and find more balance in life. And I love number one, because I see this a lot. It's called personalizing or externalizing. So when financial problems arise, typically people do one of two things. They either personalize it or externalize it. And personalizing it is blaming yourself. Externalizing it is blaming everyone else around you instead of taking responsibility for yourself. So for example, say you didn't get a promotion at work. Now, if you personalize it, you might blame it on your weaknesses or the lack of talent. Okay? Externalizing it is blaming somebody else. Oh, this person hates me, or this person, you know, kissed, you know what, for the boss, you know, and they got the gig, and it's their fault, right? Usually, it's all or nothing. You either blame yourself and you get really down on yourself, or you blame somebody else and you get mad at somebody else. But in reality, it's usually somewhere in between. If you personalize it, you might say, oh, I always blow these opportunities. I'm never going to get ahead. You get really negative about yourself. Now, first off, you have to ask yourself if you're blowing this into a bigger deal than it is. And usually you are. And usually you're blaming yourself too harshly. So ask yourself, what happened? What if a friend came to you with the same situation, and you were trying to give them advice? This had happened to them. Okay? What would you tell them? Also, what did other people do? Maybe someone else worked really hard and got the job as well, and they were just, you know, a little more qualified. Okay? Now, if you tend to externalize it, Maybe try to bring it back on yourself. What did I do? Maybe I didn't work hard enough. Maybe I didn't go the extra mile. Maybe I wasn't friendly enough with somebody. Maybe I didn't service my clients as well. There's, you know, bring it back in yourself as well. It's usually somewhere in between. And that's with all money issues. So try not to go extreme with your reaction. Now we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through right now.
A podcast distribution made possible by KPP Financial will continue right now. InvestTalk is kind of an unusual podcast in that you can call and talk to the hosts and be part of it. InvestTalk is produced every weekday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. And then you can call and talk to Steve or Justin live, 888-99-CHART. Continue now with this Monday, August 29th, InvestTalk. What retirees don't understand is that they're unknowingly exposing themselves to potentially costly risk. How to make sense of investment risk? That's next time. But we're ready to answer any money question right now. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us from anywhere in the U.S.
Hi, guys. I was calling about Horsehead Holdings, Zinc Q, and I know that it would kind of go against your companies that don't make money philosophy since it's in bankruptcy, but it seems like it's having some positive news stories, and I was wondering if you thought anything positive could come out of this whole thing for the shareholders. Thank you. Bye.
You're correct. I don't like it because it doesn't make money. It's bankrupt. I don't know what the news stories are, so I can't speculate whether that's going to be positive. Sure. Could it be positive? Yeah. The odds of it, you making any money on this, very low. I would say single digits, and that's being generous. So, no. I mean, don't invest in bankrupt companies. I mean, the story is great. Sure. Sounds like a cool story, but they're bankrupt. The odds of a shareholder getting anything are very low. I know people look at these, it's like, oh, it's trading at 32 cents. Close the day. Well, guess what? Friday, it closed 11 cents higher. So it was down 25.5% today. It's a penny stock. You're not going to... It's gambling. You might as well go to Vegas, go to the roulette table, get a free drink in the meantime, put it on black, and you have a better shot at doubling your money than on a penny stock that's bankrupt. So just stay away, please. All right, now let's get back to our talking point today. And I talked a little bit about personalizing versus externalizing your money issues. It's always somewhere in between. Don't get too extreme with blaming other people or getting too down on yourself and blaming yourself. There's multiple factors that go into everything. Then number two, magnifying and minimizing. So there's a human tendency to magnify the bad and minimize the good. We're drawn to the negative. Why? Because it evokes more emotion. Fear is a stronger emotion than greed. It is. They're both strong emotions, but fear is stronger. Okay. Now, so let's take the example of saving money for a down payment on a house. So you want to save $500 a month. And it's going to take you 2 years to get enough money to save for a house. And after 3 months, you might find yourself focusing on, wow, I got to save another $10,500 to get there. And that might look overwhelming. That $10,000 is a lot of money. And you might think, oh, I'll never get there. But the problem is you're not focusing on the right thing. What you should be focusing on is the $1,500 you did save. the progress you did make towards your goal, not the daunting task of what's ahead of you. Nobody achieved anything great overnight. It's not going to happen for any of you overnight. Being educated in the market isn't going to happen overnight. It's going to take time, but you need to be diligent and focus on what you've done, where, how far you've come, all the stuff you've learned, the money you have saved. And then say, okay, how did I get that? And how can I do more of that? And if you think positively about it, you're much more likely to have that good final outcome. If you think negatively about it, I think you're really in trouble. Number three, overgeneralizing. Now, stop me if you've seen this before. You walk out of a restaurant and you see a Ferrari parked out front, or a Lamborghini, or whatever. Think of a really nice exotic car. And you start thinking, wow, that guy's living the dream. He must have a ton of money, makes hundreds of thousands a year, maybe millions of dollars a year, probably lives in this huge mansion, perfect family. His life is awesome. The problem is, we take one small piece of information and we start to overgeneralize things about that particular person. We leap to conclusions because it's easy. But for the most part, the odds are that person probably has some issues. They might have money issues, even though they're driving a Ferrari. I know a few of them. I live in Orange County. I see it. I see Ferraris all the time. Lamborghinis all the time. I live in Laguna Beach. It's everywhere. And I know people that have hundreds of millions of dollars, that have a ton of expensive cars, and they're living perfectly comfortably. I also know people that drive a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or whatever, and they're in a ton of debt. They have legal issues. They're getting a divorce. They're not happy at all. So don't sit there and think just because one person has one nice thing or it went on this nice vacation or something like that, that his whole life or her whole life are just roses and peaches. Because it's not. Everybody has issues, okay? So don't get too down on yourself just because one person has something or did something that you want or you want to do, okay? Now, our first priority is answering your questions, no matter how or when they come in. So let's pick up a call that came in before today's program on our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, I'm calling in with a question to get your opinion on whether to reinvest dividends in regular account. And what would you recommend in doing for retirement account, whether to reinvest the dividends? Thank you.
Well, I think your answer is the same on both. Now, we don't, for our clients, reinvest the dividends because we like to have that cash and be able to redeploy it when we want. Now, for everyone else out there, when you reinvest the dividend, when you get paid that dividend, it reinvests at the around the price of the day that you get the dividend of that particular stock. Well, what if the stock's overbought and you rather buy it on a pullback, right? Or maybe you want to redeploy that money in another stock that you're looking to buy, or bond you're looking to buy, or a mutual fund, or an ETF, whatever it is. And you have more control on the timing of that. So I think for the average person who isn't kind of thinking about those things on a consistent basis, I think reinvesting dividends is fine and probably best. But if you're a little more, you're more active, you're more consistent with paying attention to your portfolio, finding good opportunities, then I think that you can take that money, put it in your account, and be more selective when you redeploy it. But for the majority of people, I would just reinvest the dividends. Now, here's a text question from Matt in Nebraska. He says, hi, Steve and Justin. I was curious on your opinion of two investment apps. One is called Stash, seems to use ETFs, and on in Robinhood, which is for individual stocks. Thank you for your time and show. I think a lot of the robo-investing platforms out there are okay. I think they're a good way to start, to get your foot in the door of investing. But I don't think they're great longer term. And the reason I say that is because they tend to just index, right? And I've been saying this for a while, is indexing is a fad now. And it's a fad when the market is going up. Well, when the market goes down, what goes down with it? Well, index funds. And they go right down along with it. And you're going to have a bear market in the next year, 2-3 years. It's going to happen. And all those people who think, oh, I'm allocated, great. This robo advisor did the thing for me. They're going to get hurt. And they're going to be shocked by the outcome. That's why I'm not a huge fan of robo advisors. Are they bad? No. Are they as good as they are advertised to be? Absolutely not. I'm not familiar with Stash, so I can't really comment on it. Robinhood, I know, is a platform that's commission-free. You're going to have less support there. I haven't used it, but free commissions are nice. I just haven't used it too much, so I can't really give you too much perspective. Right? Let's get back to our talking point. Number four is being pessimistic. Think of this scenario, and a lot of people might have had this. You wake up in the middle of the night, you're worried because your company might downsize. You think so pessimistically that you're like, oh, I'm gonna get fired. I know I'm gonna get fired. Then I'm gonna have no income. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get a job in this environment. I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to get a divorce, I'm going to lose my kids to my wife, I'm going to be on the street. I think everyone's kind of had that type of line of thinking at some point in their life. And it's called catastrophic thinking. And it's really unhealthy because it really takes the air out of you, takes the energy out of you. And that's really what life's about. It's about energy. You know, the energy you put out into the world is the energy you get back. You put out positive energy, the odds are positive things are going to happen to you. You put out negative energy, the odds are negative things are going to happen to you. So how do you stop this? Well, first, it's important to analyze what's truly possible from what isn't. Now, could your company downsize? Sure. Could you lose your job? Sure. Are you so unskilled that you're not going to be able to find another job, no matter what the economy is doing? Probably not. Okay. And even if that's true, could you lose your home? Yeah, maybe. Do you have other options? Probably. Is your wife going to leave you because of that? Probably not. Are you going to lose your kids because of that? Probably not. You know, so what happens is you start with things that are truly possible and you jump to those conclusions so quickly because they are possible, and then you keep going with it to other conclusions that are so unlikely. And it's just pessimistic behavior. And it's really bad. It's really bad for you. So try to stay away from that line of thinking because it can lead you into a bad place with bad outcomes. All right. Number five is assuming that someone can read your mind. This is a lot about relationships here. And this is something I know Steve, not anymore, but Steve used to advise newlyweds in the Catholic Church. And one thing he always talked about to me was that one question he would ask is, how much are you comfortable spending without telling your spouse? And that usually sparked a lot of controversy, a lot of arguments. You know, one said $100, one said $500, and this, you know, maybe it's $1,000. Who knows? But it usually wasn't the same number. And so, you know, lack of communication caused strife. It caused resentment. And so if your spouse is a spending problem and you're not speaking up about it, then that is going to make you anxious, create resentment. And it's eventually going to lead to a bad emotional outcome. Okay? So try not to do that. Try to be open, honest about your emotions, about how you feel about money. And you're very likely to have much better outcomes. Because if you communicate, the other person can change their habits before resentment and problems really seep into that relationship. So that's really what it's about. It's about understanding that nobody can read your mind. And if you assume that, that leads to problems down the line. Open communication is very, very important. And then finally, reasoning with your emotions. And this happens when you allow your heart, not your head, to guide it. For instance, you might think, I'm feeling anxious, so there must be another recession coming, right? And you start allowing that fear to control the rational thinking. Okay? And that's when you get into trouble. It really is. So try to separate the fear from the rational thinking, the facts. And that's what we do on the show. We try to help you weed out what is an emotional decision and what is a logical decision. And 9 times out of 10, when you make a logical decision, especially when it comes to investing, you're going to make the right decision as opposed to an emotional decision. 8899 chart is our anytime number, but you can get through to the program during our live hour. Live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can call us. We'll answer your question. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, so if you are listening live, give us a call. But if not, you can always reach our 24-hour listener line, and we'll answer your question on the next InvestTalk. Or you can send me a note directly. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button or Contact Steve button, and that will go directly to us.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Dan from Staten Island, New York. Just wanted to ask you, I'm thinking about buying a half position in each of these two, one of ABX symbol and the other is GDX symbol. What do you think would be a good entry point, and what do you favor? Do you favor one over the other is what I meant to say. Looking forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. Once again, thank you for educating all of us.
All right, he's looking at ABX, Barrick Gold, or GDX. So GDX is a gold mining ETF, and ABX would be contained inside GDX along with a lot of other gold miners as well. So you're either going for the pure play, Barrick Gold, or you're going for the diversified gold mining play, GDX. And he's looking for a half position. And I'd say now's a good time. We've had a little bit of drop. I've been holding off on buying new gold mining positions for a lot of new clients recently, but I just started to pick up a couple, and one, it was ABX last week. And so I think it's a good time to be putting on a half position. Could gold miners pull back a little bit more? I do think so. They were overbought, and that's why I kind of held off a little bit. Now they're starting to be oversold. Like I said, could they get a little more? Sure, but I still think they will eventually break out once again. You know, we were heavy into the gold mining space late last year, have had a fantastic run. I've had a great performance so far this year, and a lot of that has to do with the gold miners. So I still think it's a great place to be, and I like that you're looking at it. I like that you're looking into that space. I think it should be part of everybody's portfolio. Now let's talk a little bit about term versus whole life insurance? I get this question a lot from clients, from listeners, you know, what from friends and family. And there's two main types of life insurance, term and permanent. And whole life is the most popular type of permanent life insurance. Now, term life insurance is the easiest to understand, is the lowest cost. Whole life is the most well-known and simplest form of permanent life insurance. Other kinds of permanent life include universal, variable, universal. I wouldn't do either any of those three. So let's talk about term. Term life insurance provides coverage for a certain period of time. It's called pure life insurance, a lot of people call it. Now, if you have a term policy and you die within that term, your beneficiaries receive the death benefit, whatever that is. The policy has no other value. Now, typically, the policies range from 1 year to 30 years. The most common coverage is for 20 years, okay? Most policies, the coverage stays, or the policy premium stays the same throughout the entire term. And if you choose a term that, really what you should do is you should choose a term that coincides with the years that your family would most be financially vulnerable, along with the amount they would need if you were no longer there to provide for them. So for example, if you just had your last kid, right? You're done having kids. And you know, okay, 18 years from now, he's gonna be an adult. Maybe do a 20-year term policy, because 20 years from now, your kids will be grown. They'll be able to get a job and sustain themselves. Hopefully in 20 years, you'll have your house paid off. You'll have plenty of money in savings for a financial safety net. So you don't really need money beyond that term. Okay? Now that's just an example. You could want to go longer. It's possible. Could want to go shorter. But really, term life insurance is about protecting your family or protecting the ones that are reliant on you. And that term usually does that very, very well. Now, whole life insurance, that's another ballgame. It has a surrender value. A lot of people advertise it as savings. It's not a great savings vehicle. But for permanent, if you want permanent life insurance, lasting the rest of your life, to support people that maybe are going to be relying on you for a long time, maybe you have disabled children or something like that, it can be okay. But for the most part, term life will cover most people's needs. Now our time is up. A reminder, Steve will be in San Jose this Wednesday, August 31st. He has, I think, one or two slots left for individual retirement reviews. To schedule your hour with him, just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, which is a registered investment advisor firm. For Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Hope you can meet up with us again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.